With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is an official Chat and Shit disclaimer.
Yeah.
You might be listening to this thinking, oh my days, some of this sounds really dated because we're not in lockdown as much anymore.
It is.
Well, that's fine.
It's vintage.
Exactly. Some of it was recorded a little while back. Get over it.
So just play it. And if you don't like or you think, oh, that's wrong, skip it 15 seconds.
Just skip it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right, press play now.
You are now in tune to the Chat and Shit podcast. Guess what?
Guess what?
This is a podcast. And it's called Chatting Shit, boy. Welcome.
You go. What are you saying, man?
Yeah, good. Good. Back on the THC.
I can tell, man. Bit lean, bit off kilter.
No. I'm if anything, I'm on kilter, on. Which on. I give more, I think, emotion.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. But I mean, I'm acting like I haven't seen you. We're just in a writing meeting all day.
Yeah, on Zoom.
Yeah. You sent me a text saying you smoked the THC vape by mistake and didn't want to tell anyone.
Yeah, because I thought I'd get in trouble. Even though I'm a 35-year-old man, I still think I can get in trouble.
Brilliant intro, man.
Yeah.
I'm very excited because not only is today's guest a dear, dear friend that's been a part of our journey from the very start,
yes,
but he is also, well, the only person we knew that drove a car at one point in our lives, which is...
It wasn't just any car either.
Oh, God, no. No. Well, when we say it was a GTI, that might be a little bit of a clue. This talented young man hails from the land of wood and water, brackets Come Jamaica.
On. Yeah. Via Kingston.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Upon Thames. Yeah.
Yeah.
Only speaks when he feels vitally necessary. The person that got me into 80s dancehall, the actor, the professional weed smoker, turned high caliber sound man / DJ, the one, the only, Mr. Daniel Sylvester, a.k.a. Danny Rankin, a.k.a. Decoy, from the one show that we've ever done, People Just Do Nothing!
Danny Rankin!
Yo.
Oh, Denzel Radcliffe is in the building.
Oh, come on. I think the most we called Dan, and the way we said it when we were filming in Japan was Dan, and it just came from like
I don't even know where it's born out.
It came from the wedding episode because you went,
oh, yeah.
"Yeah, man," but really, I think you said, "Yeah,
oh,
Dan.
Yeah, that's it."
So like every time Dan said something, and he was just really laid back and. Not even, you know what I mean? Not really like kicking up a fight. And we're like, yeah, Dan.
Yeah. Then it got worse. It got Dan.
Well, like, if anything went wrong, it would just be Dan. And then the whole like cast and crew was just saying it. And it was just like.
And Japanese people as well, yeah. Wasn't it? Like, Japanese
people. Like, they know English, but they know Dan.
Yeah.
It was hectic, man. Like going to bed ringing in my ears. Like
I remember, yeah, at one point, we filmed like 14-hour days and that. And at one point, Dan just went, what are you doing? Are you fucking, are you trying to make me have a breakdown or something?
Really pushing it.
It's pushing it way too far.
Yeah, yeah.
Your handshakes are insane as well.
Oh,
man.
I needed at least 20 handshakes with a click, like 80s hip hop handshakes with a click.
An hour. Yeah.
An hour. Yeah.
It became an obsession, man.
It did, man.
Yeah.
Because when you're standing around, isn't it? Like, you need these weird little things to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true.
Or I do.
Yeah, most people, like, think of the role and, like a different approach and shit. We literally fuck around until they're going, guys, we're rolling.
And then we're like, oh, fuck, yeah, we're in. We're filming something. Yeah, I remember, like, I didn't know my lines on one bit, and in between I should have just been learning them, but I just thought it's too pointless saying the same thing over and over again, isn't it? I'd rather just fuck around and hope it just comes out. And I think it worked in the end.
Yeah. Until it comes to the edit and you got nothing.
Yeah. Or there's a reason why everything's chopped to bits. Yeah.
There is a reason, I suppose, that the only two people that got to do a reshoot is me and you, Hugo.
Yeah, no, man.
So obviously, I mean, it's easing up now, but we've all been in lockdown.
Yeah,
as we say to all of our guests, this is not a lockdown podcast, but Dan, how you been coping, and what have you been like doing?
Like, I'm someone like who likes to chill anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, the concept of lockdown was not devastating at first.
Yeah.
Like, the first couple of weeks was cool. Literally, like, I feel the first couple of weeks I really didn't do anything. I was just kind of kind of more anxious and scared of, like, fuck, or, like, the world's literally, like,
yeah,
fucking up. Like, it took a while to get my head around it. Quite anxious, but and more for, like, my mum. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
She's in that high-risk category.
Yeah, it was scary, man.
No, man, definitely.
But now I've kind of leveled out a bit now. Like, I feel like I've gauged what it's about. And I'm not checking like the news every minute, like, do you know what I mean? I've accepted it before, like, and just trying
that's
to
that's the thing, isn't it? Like, I mean, as a human race, we survive and we move on, but you adapt, but like, it takes a while, isn't it? And also, like you said, like, because I was the same, like, at first anyway, was just like watching the news every day, but obviously a lot of chilling. I mean, I guess it goes hand in hand with the weed smoker's lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. But I feel like that's just generally my personality. I'm a house don, innit? Like,
yeah. I'm the same, man. And well, it's good though, because also apart from that, it's taught us to, like, you know, like, you chill in parks and, you know, like little things that we used to do when we was younger, but you know.
You know what? Like, I thought when lockdown came in, like, I was like, right, this is like a good time to be like creative. I'm gonna do loads of shit, and the first couple of weeks, like, I was like, do you know what? I'm gonna get back on like making beats, and I was like making beats, and I made quite a few, and then like I was like proper getting in the rhythm of things, and then I think I got like offered to do a set, or I was just like, yeah, done like the live streaming set on live and that, and then so I was like, all right, cool, I'm gonna like get like a set together, I'll get tunes together and that, and then after like doing that set, like, my like production levels went low, man, and I just had no motivation, just got out of a routine basically, because that's the hardest thing, is keeping a routine in your yard, man. That's kind of
I hear that.
There's always a distraction.
Yeah, always a distraction,
always something to do.
So yeah, my production levels have gone down a lot,
but you've been doing your DJing, your live streams, isn't it, man?
Yeah, of course. But you know what? Like, sometimes in this scenario, it's not really work, because I enjoy listening to tunes, putting that together. Like, that's why it's a passion. I like doing that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously, like, out of lockdown and when you're doing gigs and sets, sometimes actually this is kind of long. Like,
do you change your set for every show, or like, do you tweak it kind of as you go, you know, like?
Yeah, I don't like to always go in blind, because I feel like you could be setting yourself up for disaster.
Yeah.
And when you've got like obviously loads of people in a club waiting to have a good night, and you're there just like,
yeah, man, the pressure's on you, like,
yeah, of course. And I've been caught out like that as well, I like to like know preferably beforehand what the vibe is, so I can come correct with like, if it's like a gag, like I'm not gonna just come and play bare bashing tunes. It's just
You gotta sniff it out.
But when I do that, like obviously outside of Corrupt, like I don't want to be going to do them shows as like people thinking they're gonna get Corrupt Decoy. Like I still want to come bring that like kind of bashing sound to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess people would expect some garage. Like, must be hard. Like, whenever we all do a show together, when we get there, we start to assess what tunes we should drop. And then it's normally a conversation that we all have, like,
yeah, of course,
45 minutes, half hour before.
Drinking in the green room.
Basically, please play this.
Yeah. Well, my London shows are like different to like some
like Liverpool
all that time. Like,
definitely.
Yeah, you have to know your audience, man. I do feel sometimes that it's easy in London as well.
Yeah.
But if it's not our own crowd, like obviously if they people are coming to like a Corrupt FM show.
But like I know the scene in London and like I know people in London.
I was gonna say, let's be honest boys, when we're in London, yeah. The whole fucking place is our own crowd.
Yes, we do fucking go sick, mate, in London.
Hey guys, it's Ron here. Coming back at you like Cleopatra. Trying out a new catchphrase. But I hope y'all guys enjoy the podcast. And remember, all the links will be down at the bottom. All the recos down at the bottom. And I hope y'all enjoy them.
Hey, Danny Ranks, do you what you been watching then recently? What you been doing when you be like, as in like recommendations for the people? Watching, listening, reading, playing.
I watched today, which is sick. I was going to send it to the group to you boys. Yeah. Got Menace to Society on Netflix.
Yeah,
I watched it today, man. And do you know what? Like, I used to love that film back in the day, but I haven't seen it since back in the day.
Yeah.
So, I wonder if this is going to be like dated a bit.
Yeah.
But do you know what? It's actually sick.
It aged well, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Like how some of the shots in that, like proper. You know what? I think it's better than Boys in the Hood.
Yeah.
It always seems to feel
dated when you watch Boys in the Hood.
Yeah.
But maybe that's because we're from a different generation as well. And like, not saying we can relate to gangbangers in LA, but we were more into that like 90s kind of shit rather than the 80s shit. Do you know what I'm saying?
And you can tell the actors are kind of a bit more from that background. Whereas Boys in the Hood, like Cuba's, you can question his acting in that film, man. And you can tell he's not that cloth. Do you know what I mean?
And it was a different type of acting as well, like back then.
To be fair, Ice Cube was a much better actor in that film.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Do you know what? I must have watched Menace Society, you know, probably about 20 times plus growing up. But I haven't watched it for maybe 10, 15 years, bruv. So,
And it's the classic hour and a half film as well. So,
perfect.
Best film length of all time, mate.
Oh, yeah.
Anything over that, you're asking. That's a lot of investment.
Too much attention.
What else?
What else have I been watching? Obviously, the greatest of all time, The Last Dance, Michael Jordan.
Oh, bro.
I've been waiting for that.
That's something I wanted to talk to you about. Because for people that don't know, Dan is a massive basketball fan. And
I've been out of the league for haven't followed it for the last year or so.
Right. I messaged you maybe once or twice asking if you'd watched it yet, and I remember you saying you're saving it because it's obviously
good. Yeah. Because I wanted to bang it out. I mean, the whole weekly releasing when working for Man, you didn't.
No. So I'm only on Ep 7 at the moment.
Okay.
So we can talk up to there. Yeah. I knew about all these names, because I mean, when me and you first met, we sort of connected over basketball a little bit, but I was more like a fan of it rather than completely.
You're more of a sort of real court sider.
Oh, I'm the actual court sider. I might do a little, do you know what I mean? A little
jump shot.
Try and get it in the net about 20 times, hit it once and walk off.
A layup when no one's looking.
Yeah. And then like blaze it there and that. But like, I was mad into the jerseys and all that growing up.
The fashion. I feel like out of all the sports, like basketball fashion was the one.
Reigns supreme, man.
It's still sick.
Bro, when I watched it, I was like, in my mind, thinking that they're being fashionable when they're wearing, you know, you forget when they've got like a snapback on.
That's just their team cap.
Nah, yeah. The Hemphill are proper strict on how you wear your uniform, innit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not anymore, are they?
Nah, so basically, like, Allen Iverson, when he came into the game,
he changed it up.
Yeah, because he came in like proper gangster, like the cane roll.
Yeah. Tattoos.
Oh, wait, before that, it was quite. Yeah, but what about Rodman?
Well, yeah, same with Rodman. He wasn't
like on that street wave.
But, yeah, and people were a bit funny with Rodman because he was kind of like,
I get you.
Like, is he gay? Is he like,
they're uncomfortable with it. Whereas Allen Iverson coming on a gang.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone loved Iverson, man. He was the don.
Did you have the Iverson trainers?
Nah, I couldn't afford them back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're mad now when I look at them.
Yeah, yeah. The Reeboks, they're sick. I love it.
I remember early on, when you go on holiday with your family and you're like, you get the wrong type of Jordan, innit? Everyone obviously had the Jordan 4s and shit and the ones. And then I had these mad, like, fucking, I don't know, man.
19s.
You know, like, massive Jordans. And I remember being like, I got the Jordans going to school. Like, what the fuck is that?
Jordans, yeah?
they're Jordan. And I remember when I first met Hugo, I was one of them guys that was like, didn't have P for that shit. So I'd have maybe two pairs of trainers in my house at one time, you know, like my mum would buy me one a year. And Hugo was already kind of a trainer collector or whatever. And I'd never seen even stack of 10.
But also, I feel like a smug dick.
Of course, man. You are a fat little shit.
Even getting Jordans back then was hard. They weren't in the shop.
Yeah.
But you were well safe, though, innit? I'd be like, sick. And then you're like, I don't really wear them. You can take them if you want. What size are you? And I quickly looked at the box and they're size 8 and I was size 9. And I was like, size 8. So like, I took them and they were the white, cream and green Jordans, innit? Jordan 4s. Fucking hard. And I remember I wore them to that jungle rave and basically my feet were fucked by the end of the night. So I had to take my trainers off and walk all the way back to the station, back home, like a chick with her stilettos.
When I worked at Foot Locker, they used to be called the dead stock. Yeah, and it was like, I wish I could go back now and they just had like fucking just full up of Jordans, Air Max 97, like everything was there. I wish I just, and staff could buy it. Obviously now it'd be...
Yeah, everything was just normal back then, isn't it? But now obviously it's all classic.
Yeah, they ain't gonna do that now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I loved about that program the most is that, like I said, like I knew bare names, yeah? And the jerseys and stuff like that. But I didn't know what their personalities were like or really, a lot of them, what they even looked like. You know what I mean? I love Pippen, man. Like, I think I used to have a jersey back in the day. I didn't even know nothing about him, bro.
I remember when people would have the Pippen jersey back in the day. Slew for having the Pippen jersey.
Is it?
Yeah. But then, like, Pippen was one of these people who always had to prove himself. So, like, proper fan of basketball and you saw someone Pippen jersey, you would actually be like, Pippen.
Yeah. So, obviously, I was one of the real ones, probably.
Without even knowing.
That's just who I am. I love how sweet he is, man. In a way, it means he's stronger because he's not as petty. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I like that Michael Jordan, he just wants to win and he is fucking petty because he hates losing.
Yeah.
Proper sportsman mindset.
That's how you become the greatest. Like, the greatest athlete to ever live. Like,
in genius, in art and anything like that, I excuse the cuntishness because of like what, you know, that's special.
To be the greatest, you have to be a cunt, basically.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So that's definitely been my number one though since the whole lockdown.
I got a question for you, Dan. What are your top 5 Channel 5 documentaries of lockdown?
Wow. Okay, because for anyone that doesn't know, I used to live with Dan and every time I put the telly back on, it would be on Channel 5. I was like, why is it on Channel 5? I was like, I don't know. I don't really particularly like Channel. He loves Channel 5 documentaries.
Yeah, there's one that we both watch.
Yeah. And they, it's not on anymore though. Or was it Argin Brits Abroad?
Argin Brits Abroad, yeah.
That is That is classic, though. That is comedy gold. Sick.
This is where we just simply ask, and ask away.
Which brings me on to the bulk of the show, Danny Ranks. Yeah, man. We just want to, when we get people on here, we just want to ask, obviously, we know a lot of the answers to this, but the people don't, you know what I mean? Where did it all start for you, man? Like, I mean, originally, like early, like, how did you even get into, like, knowing that you like a certain type of music or a certain type of culture or whatever? Do you know what I mean?
I don't think I ever realised, like special point, yeah, I'm into this.
Yeah.
I just feel like I've always had an ear for music, enjoying music. But I feel like, yeah, going secondary school, garage was, like, I feel like, I think it may have been, like, a little bit of luck was popping, Rewind was popping. And just so you know, for everyone out there who thinks I look young, I'm a lot older than you may think. So I was in school when them tunes were popping.
The golden era, like.
Yeah. Do you know what? Interestingly, that is, sat, even though none of us out of the crew, apart from you and Steve, Hugo, we didn't grow up together, but we all went through that era separately. That's what kind of brought us together, isn't it?
Yeah, so like I feel like garage was really the first sound I really got into and like digged into, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like prior to that, I like growing up, like I remember being in primary school and having a Jungle Massive cassette.
Yeah, man.
And then
always a Jungle tape first, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think it may have been like Jungle Massive 3 or something like
it's
that.
It's like Hash. It's like the intro.
Jungle's like the Hash to Garage. To Garage Skunk. Yeah.
And you always end up going back to Hash because the other shit's too much.
So I remember having a Jungle Massive cassette, and I remember having a Rap Attack cassette.
Oh, fuck, I had that with the graffiti on the front.
Yeah. I remember having that. And what else? And I remember having a recorded TDK of like Cypress Hill or something like that.
I was too young
to really understand. I'm just gassed because these brothers like swearing and shit.
Did you have anyone older around you that was putting you onto this shit?
Nah, like I think I kind of just discovered it myself.
Yeah, because you're an only child, isn't it?
Yeah, so like by then time I was really young, so I only had like my school friends. There wasn't had this social network of people around me, and like only child, so I didn't have like older brothers and sisters. Just discovered it myself. But yeah, like garage during secondary school was like the sound that I fully got into. And then I can't remember what age I was, but I remember my dad getting me some decks.
Yeah.
And it was a proper shoddy setup. So like it was like, I think they were called CAM.
I had them. The Red Dwarfs.
Like belt drives.
Yeah, I had those.
They had like two brairs on the slip mats, like
like that.
Yeah, that's it. And I had like two of them, but they were two different makes. So it was one CAM and a one older CAM deck. Both nice. Decks. And some like dead cheap mixer. But I remember getting that as maybe it must have been like a birthday or something like that.
Yeah.
And getting gassed, like I got decks. And
how
then,
old were you roughly?
I don't know. I reckon I must have been like 13.
Right. Like,
early teens.
Yeah, mad young.
Because we were lucky because we had Slamming Vinyl in Kingston.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it was a sick shop, man.
So, like, I remember going there and just getting the sickest white labels. Like, I used to go there. I think it was, like, £7 a record for, like...
Yeah, it was, yeah. And then it went up to 11 for, like...
It went to 11, yeah.
Sick, really, like, basically grime. Like, anything Wiley was, like, 11.
Yeah.
When you first... Because when I first got records, obviously, I went back to my decks with them. And I was like... I don't know how the fuck to do this. And then my mate's dad, who's a drummer, taught me about bars. And then I was like, okay, just counting constantly.
Yeah.
It's all about counting.
To be fair, I could never mix. Like, I had no one to teach me.
So I taught myself.
And it just got to the point I was just the selector in it. So when the tune was coming to the end, I was like,
Do you know what I mean? Slowly bring that one up and
Hey, listen, man, that's because it's the dance hall in you, isn't it? It's the dance hall selector.
But yeah, so like, yeah, I was heavily into garage for a long, long time.
So, and Dan, then, where did Because just to put it into perspective for people, a lot of these things I don't even know about because we met maybe around the ages of 24?
Yeah, something like that.
So when we met, you weren't DJing, innit? So these were always just what you'd tell me that, oh, I used to have decks. But you never said I used to DJ, really.
But you would never give anything away, though.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm a kind of person, I don't like to speak for the sake of it, do you know what I mean? I'm not going to say, I got decks, I'm going to like do this and do that and do this. And then 3 months down the line, you see me again and like, what's been going on? I'm not telling you something when I've got something.
But I think that's important to mention, to note though, isn't it? Because not every journey starts and then is a passion forever and is a thing. It stops and starts, you know what I'm saying? So when you had those decks, like for me, it was when I met you, you'd be like, oh, I had that tune on vinyl. And I'd think, right, what did he used to do? You know what I mean? So like, when did that sort of stop? Was that like when the garage era, or that kind of era? Because obviously when we were younger, pretty much everyone either DJed or MC'd, and then it kind of faded out, innit?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And it resurfaces when people are drunk at parties now.
Yeah, of course.
I feel like Seek would definitely relate to me with this. Like where we grew up was kind of like there's an in-between world, man. Like you're on the outskirts of London, so you got like me heavily like intrigued by what's going on in London, but then it's kind of on the outskirts where nothing's popping where we are, and like no disrespect to the ends, but people have got a one way of thinking.
Yeah, definitely.
That wasn't my way of thinking. And there wasn't many people in the ends that I could really relate to or really interested in what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So, like a lot of things fizzled out for me, a lot. Like, I was just like, well, I'm stuck in, like, Kingston way, like, boring. Like, I'm young, got no peas. Like, I'm just going to, like, what's there to do is set, like, roll with my mates, innit? Mm. And that's what I did for a long, long time. Like, just didn't do fuck all, just with my mates, blazing, playing PlayStation, do you know what I mean?
Like, it was the same for me, man. Like, there was lots of music, lots of shit going on, like, you know, decks in people's garages, blazing that. And then when that era sort of faded out, you know, actually, not many people were really into that. It's, you know what I mean? They just got into fucking around or, you know, crime or doing a day job and that was it.
Yeah,
and then people like me and you were just kind of left there, innit? Like, high and dry. Like, oh, okay. Well, I guess we just fuck about and blaze, innit? And then we met when I walked into CTC call center, innit, and I just see you sitting there, and I got sat next to you to mirror your call or whatever because you was already working, innit?
Of course. So obviously I'd hang out with my mates, but obviously I had like my life where I was into what I was into, like listening to, and which was at that time hip hop and dancehall.
Yeah.
And like, but I feel hip hop was more of a bigger passion for me then, because like obviously we're growing up, like we're becoming adults, and we just don't fit in the system anywhere, and hip hop just talks to you in the right way, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I got so consumed by hip hop and the culture and the lifestyle for a long time, man. But and probably mostly when with you, because like I had a few mates that were into it, but they weren't down for the culture, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And that was the first thing we said to each other was like, would you listen to, you know, like, but you're both a bit suspicious.
Because
in our minds, like, no one really knows about the shit we listen to, innit? And then we're like, you know, mentioned different 90s hip hop and that. We're like, oh, okay. What do you blaze? Yeah. Oh, okay.
I think it was Jedi Mind Tricks that really said
that it. Yeah. Fucking like early woke kind of shit, conscious, like fucking anti-establishment, like
dark.
Yeah, dark, man.
Very
and
dark.
I remember like sitting next to Dan and thinking like, yeah, like this was before I got the boys a job there, so it was just me and you and Fatty there, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then going into you're like, yeah, you come and blaze a zoo in my whip at lunchtime or something, or you give me a lift after work or something. I remember coming out like, bro, like, he had a BMW. And I was like, in my mind,
I remember that as well.
That's flossing. Yeah. I was like, how much was this? And you were like, I don't know, it were like two bags or three bags or some shit.
There's quite a dark side story to the Beamer. So the reason I had the Beamer was not long before that. I think that was the year maybe my dad passed.
Right.
Oh. So basically, like, my dad wasn't rich, had fuck all, basically.
Yeah.
And when he passed, like...
Feltham legend. Feltham
legend. Yeah. Legend.
Yeah, he got that Feltham crew. So I wasn't left anything from him. So, like his mates done, like, a, you know, like, at funerals, like a whip round or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And I got, I don't know how much it was. I think it was, like, 500-600 quid or something like that. And then, and obviously I was working at CTC, like, putting in all the hours. And I was, like, and I was feeling shit about everything. I was, like, fuck it. I'm just going to buy a fucking car, man. Splurged all my peas on that Beamer, man.
It's mad that that car, in some ways, linked to the future, if you think about it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but to take it back to the link to the GTI, because that the BMW links into that.
Yeah.
But, one time you were going back to Czech Republic and you were like, could I get a lift to the airport? And basically, like, I had the Beamer, but I wouldn't really look after it because I didn't really know about cars in it. I didn't know if you have to put fucking water and oil and shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So fucking, we're on our way to Gatwick and, like, we're bombing down the motorway and, like, literally the engine explodes, yeah? Oh, it's all over the fucking motorway. Pulled over, didn't know what the fuck to do.
I remember you said to me the engine's exploding, and I was like, what? The whole thing exploded with us in it, not understanding.
It was fucked. Like, I remember bare smoke and shit all over our fucking.
Yeah.
Anyway, ringing my cousins, like, yeah, the engine's smoking, man. Is anyone But I remember you basically missed your flight.
Yeah.
And had to, like, yeah, that was hectic. So basically I was carless and just needed a world cheap fucking runaround. And I found this local car, I think it was like 400 quid, and it was the Golf GTI.
Fuck it, there you go. Golf GTI that features in nothing. That's literally Decoy's whip.
Yeah.
That's nice actually, because that shows us a time scale, isn't it? So when you got that is pretty much when we started filming. We're not properly filming, but fucking about on YouTube.
YouTube.
People do nothing, and we literally, the reason Decoy has a GTI is because Dan had one in real life, innit?
Yeah, exactly.
And you had to get a lift from Kingston, to Brentford, and Dan would give you a lift, but
we'd smoke on the way, and I was, you might as well be in it, innit? And then he was like, I don't know about that being in some acting shit, and I was like, you don't have to say anything. You can literally sit there blazing, you don't have to say anything. And that's where born, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've spent so much time, us three, in a GTI. That's all I can ever really think of. Like,
us three, innit? Us three the
us
most.
Us three always in that car, man.
Yeah, man.
Well, I love the GTI.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, right about now you are locked into the legendary Chat and Shit podcast, lad, with Alan Seep and Mustafa, Hugo Chegwin, and a nice little special guest there. So kick back, tune in, and listen. You might hear something you like.
So Dan, can you remember then, like, the first time you went in front of a camera with us and what you thought was going on, kind of thing?
Probably the whole time was like, keep the camera off me, man. Allow me. But do you know what? Like I feel like it was actually just nice being a part of something, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, actually doing something that's out of the ordinary. Yeah. But it's kind of sick and it's jokes, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I felt that too, man. Exact same thing.
Yeah, like you're working towards something, but you don't quite know what that is.
I feel it was just for us at that time.
Yeah,
100%.
I don't think there was any thought process like, right, we're doing this together.
It was for when your friends come round to Blaze and like you need to find something to watch. Like you had those, like now I know they're called rushes, but before they were just QuickTime files on the laptop.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what's this? This is joke.
Because like obviously then times as well, there weren't like social networks like it was now where people share constantly. Yeah. And that, like, YouTube, like, was about for a little bit.
Yeah, and we still didn't really know. I mean, we didn't even know that you can upload your own shit onto it before this point, did we?
Yeah, it was more a bit dodgy, YouTube. Like, it had full films and documentaries.
I thought it was still, a DVD era, do you know what I mean? Like, with Lord of the Mics and all that shit. Like, you go to a shop, HMV, to physically buy your do you know what I mean?
We were probably part of the first wave of, like, YouTube comedy to transition.
Yeah, that's that. For anyone that doesn't know, we did that. Was that were the webisodes? That were the webisodes.
That were the webisodes.
Those were the webisodes that we made and we put on YouTube just to kind of share about to our friends and on Facebook and all that. And the first episode was called No Source, and yeah, that was up there for time. I think we made 5 episodes in a space of like 3 years, maybe.
Yeah,
we all still had jobs and that. Yeah. The edit would take a long time. It would be Asim editing them and that. And then so like, can you remember a point when we were making them that you thought, you know, the first time we did it, because we were in the same boat really, Dan. I didn't want to be an actor or anything like that. But obviously I was a little bit more extrovert than you. You're more kind of...
I'm the complete opposite to you.
Yeah.
So I'm the complete opposite to a lot of you boys. Because you guys have always had the character element from day, like from the first day of meeting you guys, like you were doing some mad shit, like doing the pretending to be hip hop MCs and the call centers and all that mad shit. And like, and who was them country Barnaby or
mad
character, always doing it. But like, I would like thrive off that and think that was jokes, innit? Like, I couldn't necessarily be you guys because obviously I'm not like big like that, you know what I mean? But it was sick to be around people that were just doing mad shit like that constantly.
That's the thing, and everyone kind of had their role within our little crew, innit? Do you know what I mean? And that, and I guess that was your role, like kind of going with the flow, you know, like which was sick because I think we all had to a little bit at the time just go with things because we didn't really know what we were doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you always need an audience as well. And you were the kind of like, if it made you laugh, then it was good.
Yeah, exactly. Dan's proper quiet and stush, yeah. So if something make Dan laugh, then you're like, oh, thank fuck for that. All right, okay.
Yeah.
So like, at what point did you feel like this could be going somewhere then?
Do you know, I always had faith in it because obviously apart from that, I was doing fuck all, man.
So
basically, I feel maybe it was like 3 episodes into the YouTube thing where it's like, do you know what? It's actually getting views and like, people were talking about it outside of the friend group, do you know what I mean? Or the people who used the show, do you know what I mean? It was like random people. And it was like, rah, this is actually
It made
up.
It to like outer circles of your friendship group.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just like your immediate friends.
It was messages on Facebook being like, is this you?
Yeah, I hated that. I feel embarrassed.
That was, for us, Dan, that was massive, innit? We were like, what? Like, this is... Because I was like you, to be honest. Like, I like to say that, yeah, I believed in it from the start and I thought it was going to be something. But I was just coasting along, fucking about, and happy to be surrounded by people that are actually doing some things, innit?
Of course.
And then, like, to hear those little moments.
But I feel for everyone, it was like that small bit of hope and, sounds cheesy, joy that we all had. Like,
I mean, yeah, I brought you all joy. That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah. But we're all holding on to it a little bit. Like,
yeah, definitely. And like Dan says, we had no other option. I mean, we did, but we didn't really. We didn't have any qualifications or other aspirations, really, innit? So that was the YouTube era. And then we got an email from John Petrie saying we should go for a meeting. I think it was just us boys, but you knew about it, Dan. And they said they want to try and help us develop this and get a pilot for.
Yeah. I remember that.
Do you remember how you felt when I called you and told you about that?
I probably vividly remember getting commission for the series.
Right. Yeah.
Like, the pilot was like, it's cool, but like, we all know what a pilot is. It's just one episode.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was more of a scary time because really that could have been the end. After the pilot, where do you go?
Yeah.
If it doesn't pop,
like, it's over.
This is what I vividly remember though. You calling me and going, well, I've had a call from Rough Cut saying they want to meet me. And like, you almost felt like it was like an audition or interview for something you'd already been in.
That's what I probably thought was you pranking me.
I remember you said you felt really nervous and you went there for a meeting and they just wanted to chat. And I guess they wanted to.
I had to kind of do a bit of an audition. So I remember I went there with Asin and I think because to go there with someone, so it's not as threatening, just me wandering in this big fucking TV production office. Like, but I remember. They're like, all right, cool. We're going to do like a screen test, just like film you or whatever, doing your lines or whatever. And I remember like getting the script and obviously Deagle, I had like one word in the fucking whole script or whatever. And they were doing the thing and I'd done my one word and they were like, yeah, this isn't really what we wanted. And so I had to do you. I had to be Grindr, innit? And I had to read a fucking Grindr passage, man. And it was horrible, man. Like, like them ones where you come out, like, you need an instant shower and shit like that. Pretending to be Grindr. Like.
Oh, man.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know you called me straight back afterwards at the time because they said to us, they were like, okay, so, like, you guys are the leads, but, you know, how about all the other characters? We're like, no, like, everyone that's been in it on the YouTube is part of it. That's it, innit? Yeah. And they were like, okay, yeah. Well, we're not disputing that because I think Lily had the same thing, maybe. So the character... A little bit smaller, Mish. They just wanted to meet them in person to see that you're still about it and you're still definitely up for it. But yeah, I remember it being a bit funny, the fact that you, like, why would you even have to do that? You know what I mean? Like, you are the character. Based it on, so it's kind of.
I was
like,
mad. Yeah, I didn't expect that to fucking end up in an audition. Literally,
fucking hell! I can't believe you auditioned for me, you snake.
I know. I feel the day where I was like. Do you know what? This is it now, is when basically I quit my full-time job.
Which was...
just like labouring, basically. I always had faith in Corrupt because I always knew that I had to keep myself flexible, innit? So I knew, like, if I was going to, like... Because I was in that transition. I didn't do uni. I didn't have higher education. So I was like... And I didn't want to just do bullshit jobs. But even now, I was just going to end up in a normal
life. When you were getting a job, were you in the back of your mind, were you like, I need this to be a job where if I need like 6 weeks off, I can do that? Like,
So basically, that's why I done like basically labouring.
Sick. That's the sacrifice.
Yeah. It was a graft, man. I remember like them time doing like working 5 days a week, proper grafting, and then doing gigs on the weekend. You know, horrible ones, then £50 shows in like nowhere, like driving all up there.
You know what, Dan, you weren't even DJing though at the time. You were, this was like early on, this was...
I was literally the driver.
Dan was the driver. It was one of the cars, it would be rolling two cars.
My car and Dan's car.
And then like, I mean, our sets were super shoddy back then. We didn't even have a role for everyone.
But you know what, I'm glad we done those shows now, man, because it made us... better performers.
100%. That was the training ground. But I remember me and Dan lived together. Dan, like you said, you were still working. we were doing, Dan's not part of the writing team. So work-wise, people to do nothing would be six weeks in a year filming. And then the rest of it was like, you know, every weekend or every other weekend, the live gigs, isn't it? Like you're saying.
Yeah.
For £50, yeah.
Yeah.
Just literally doing it for the love as well.
I remember we had an argument, me and you, Super, when we got our first booking in like, I can't remember. I think it was somewhere like Oxford or something. And they were like, yeah, no, we'll book you. We'll get you one hotel room or something. And I was like, well, we're all going to sleep in one hotel room. And you were like, yeah.
I was like, yeah, sleepover style, we jokes. And you're like, no way. Hugo is the aggiest when it comes to anything like that. When it comes to home comfort, don't fuck with it.
Yeah, well,
I'm like, there's two beds, like, bruv. So that's four people. And then, and then you've got a mattress on the floor. And then I'm bringing my two mates with me as well.
Yeah, like, I don't know about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, man. It was early days. A lot of the people who do nothing stuff is based on that, man.
Yeah, that's true.
So you started doing the Danny Rankin sets, which are just 10-minute segments in the middle of our sets. Sorry, it wasn't Danny Rankin, it was Decoy. Yeah, it was Decoy dub plate, Decoy dancehall, like special, yeah.
Yeah. A little break for us as well, which little vibes moment.
And it fits in the realm of corrupt.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Just a random, like, oh, how can we wedge you into this thing? It's like, it all fits in with the story of people just doing nothing.
Yeah, the initial one was I was DJing and emceeing at the same time.
Oh, man.
Which was never going to work.
You know, as the sets went on and the different tours and that, started crocking like, Dan's fucking mixing now. He's not just selecting, he's proper mixing them.
Yeah.
And you've obviously been practicing.
Like, basically, what's mad, you know, like starting that, like, imagine going on decks and you've never played on CDJs before, like, and you don't even DJ. Like, I was actually learning in front of crowds, man. Like, the amount of, like, nightmare moments I've had on the decks during them things. But luckily we can pull it off because we're corrupt there for a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I had some shockers, man, some real bad moments. But them days are behind me now. But yeah, I physically was learning to DJ.
I remember like looking up being like, yo, shouting at you from the mic, like, in character, hectic. You're trying to learn how to DJ at the same time.
How do I do it?
Yeah, you can't hear nothing. Oh man.
Steve.
So that was your journey into then becoming Danny Rankin and branching off as yourself to start, I guess, have your own career, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, man. Bashment and dancehall was like always been like a thing I've loved. Like, I was exposed to it. I was lucky enough to go. My mum took me to Jamaica when I was about like 13, 14.
Your mum's from Jamaica, for anyone that doesn't.
Yeah, and I remember going to Jamaica and I feel like it was a real authentic experience. It wasn't like a sandals thing. Like, we went to, like, up in the country, we were living like the Jamaicans live, and it was a sick experience, man. Like, a proper eye-opener, innit?
Yeah.
But one thing, obviously, like, being that age, I knew of like reggae, and I listened to reggae, and I knew that. But
you knew Bob Marley was.
Yeah, I knew
Bob Marley. You knew Bob, yeah.
I knew Bob. But like, I didn't really know Bashment, innit? Didn't really know dancehall.
Yeah.
And then going to Jamaica, I just like, it was like, what's this sound, man? Like, I've never heard this music before. It's mad. And I remember, like, we used to chill on my nan's veranda, and this guy used to come by and just cotch with us on the veranda, and he just used to freestyle at me all the time, like, for time. And, like, I never understood one word he was saying, innit? None of the time, but I just knew it sounded bad. It was sick. And I was like, this is sick. And then I remember, like, up from where my nan lives, there was like a little dance in it. And it's like tiny, like size of a flat, basically. And then they would have a dance there like every Friday or whatever. And then like, I'd just be in my nan's yard and it was just like hearing bare noise, like bare commotion. I was like, right, is there a fight going on in it? And I was like, I remember we all left the yard and basically there was a clash going on. And it was my man that used to come visit us on the veranda and he was clashing the other local Donnie at the time. Yeah. And I was like, my mind like blew in it. I was like, this is fucking sick.
This is, and
like,
me.
be like Jamaicans. Like you can't clash Jamaicans. Like they're just the best at it. Like. Yeah. So like, obviously, like coming back from Jamaica, I was just like, right, this is it. I need to like get into this. And I remember going to like HMV, buying like Beanie Man CDs, and then from there, like my love for Bashment just grew. And then obviously through Corrupt, it was nice to like channel and tap into that a bit more.
So hold on. And, so like, is that trip that I need to thank for you putting me on to like 80s and 90s dancehall?
Because
I was always into reggae and dancehall growing up from just what I've heard and stuff. But it was you that really put me onto it and made me get deep on it, man. And just that, like, I've got to thank you for that, bro.
Yeah, that's all good. But like, essentially, that's what British UK culture is built off. You know, Brian, Gary, how MCs have their mic control. It's all—
no, I know, it all came from there. Like everything we're into, hip-hop culture, sound systems, grime culture, passing the mic around. Like it all came from there.
It's sick, man. Like, yeah, I just love the whole scene, the whole culture.
Yeah, it's true.
So going on, yeah, you're then playing out on your own as Danny Rankin, yeah? Is there any difference? Do you feel different? How did it feel stepping out on your own without your brothers, without us? Because we used to all go in as one. Like, I'd find it intimidating.
Yeah.
Intimidating, but also coming in as your own name, your own brand, Danny Rankin, rather than Decoy, you know?
Not going to lie, it's definitely a power struggle because obviously we're unknown for Decoy, so
yeah,
like, it's gonna take a long time to shrug that off and become Danny Rank as my own entity.
Yeah,
but it's sick. The first one was definitely daunting because you're like, there's no one behind me like showing me if this fucks up, how can you get me out of this? Like, man's fucked. But I feel like you learn most when you're in the most fucked up situations.
Definitely,
and like. And you learn from your mistakes, obviously. And like,
yeah,
I just made sure that I etch out all the bad mistakes ASAP, get that shit out, man. And not try do too much in it, not try and think, all right, I'm DJ now, I'm trying to be the sickest DJ and do all these mad tricks and shit.
No, yeah, but just trying to get through it, all right.
Yeah, just make sure I play good music and like it keeps the flow, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've never done anything on my own like that. You have Sipa. You've hosted.
Oh, you mean what?
With Dan.
Yeah, well, when I first did the first Danny Rankin set, and I don't really do many, do I, Dan? I just do it for a little vibe at sometimes, isn't it?
Like, style and Patan.
Style and Patan, little free ticket, you hear me? Yeah. and I remember just going straight away going, yo, like, a lot of you might know me as MC Grinder and this is Decoy, but this is a Danny Rankin set. Show your love and appreciation. This is about the rhythms, big ups. And they were cool. Because I was worried that they'd be like, and because you get the odd person going, MC, MC.
Yeah.
That's not going to get that.
Yeah.
Boy,
yeah.
Looking at that and going at the end of the set, go on, play it. Get out of the way. Run the rhythm.
I remember Dad did say that in one of my things. I've got to get out of the way. Should I play that? And I'm like, no, don't.
No, it's always good to have it just in case you start feeling yourself.
In the early days of doing the solo ones, like I would play that tune only to like make myself feel comfortable.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a crutch.
But then I actually realised that I wouldn't play the original, I'd play the spooky remix because that rhythm bangs hard.
Yeah, the original was made on GarageBand and like
the bars are ajar, but the rhythm bangs.
I still don't know all of them.
After playing it a few times, you actually realise how much of a headache that tune can be. And I'm like, actually, I don't play that anymore.
I lost the original file of that track, The version that it is the first demo bounce. That's it.
Unmixed,
really. And we've played that shit so loud,
bro. The original send you insane, man. But big up to that rhythm because that it done bits, man. That's what fucking made Corrupt.
That's what put us on the map, innit? As Corrupt, man. Yeah, mad.
Yeah, when we played, we were doing shows, and I thought like, yeah, maybe something can come of this. Like they're quite good. They're not like great, but they're quite good. But then we did Boomtown. The last set on that and fucking everyone was going mental and like all I could see was you, Steve, Dan, Marv, Asim, and the crowd. That's it. After that, I was like, I think we can make this live shit sick.
Glastonbury was our first festival. And that stage, that 20-minute set we did on that stage was blew my mind, man. That like, the amount of people in that crowd.
Like, there's about 20,000 people there, isn't it?
Yeah.
The sandwich. What's your favorite sandwich?
Right, Danny Ranks, yeah. We've come to where you are at in your journey at the moment, but we need to know one of the most important questions. I think in life, isn't it, Hugo, probably?
Well, for you, yeah. Definitely.
Ah, come on. It's
a good judge of character, I think.
Danny Ranks, Decoy, Daniel Sylvester. What is your favourite sandwich?
Favourite sandwich? Fucking hell. Do you have an answer that in your mind that you think I'm going to give?
I just think when you had a pasta, was it a pasta sandwich? Or pasta
I was just saying probably like a Subway, like a chicken teriyaki or something.
Nice.
Big beef melt as well. Quite like that.
Fucking hell. That's your favourite sandwich, a Subway?
that's
the first we've ever had that. You know, people.
I respect that.
Add this bread, and then I put this sauce in it, and then and you're like, okay, listen, chicken teriyaki.
But I'm slowly processing. Like things take time to come to me, man. I love
your family, Danny. You can have top three.
Yeah, all right. I love what are the Vietnamese ones, banh mi.
Yes, that's my top.
And do you remember when we went Thailand and we were on Koh Phangan?
Love Mr. K's.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's topped that sandwich.
Oh, my God.
What sandwich did you have?
The grilled one or the fried one?
The chicken schnitzel.
Oh, my days, bro. Fuck.
Yeah. What was it? Chicken schnitzel.
It was so basic, but it was banging.
Wait, okay, so banh mi, Mr. K's, okay, and chicken teriyaki.
Yeah, respect that, though, man. Subway know what they're doing.
Keeping it real, man. I respect that. I rate that.
It's available everywhere.
All right, so the last segment of the show, Danny, is the most important part. And knowing you, this might throw you off, but you've got to ask me and Hugo three questions each.
Three questions each. I'll be saying that I actually don't know about you guys.
That's a good point. That's a fucking good point. That's why it's harder for you.
All right. Do you prefer going to a restaurant, or do you prefer staying home, getting a takeaway, and maybe watching a film?
Hugo, you go first.
I think a restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could only do one.
Because I don't like takeaway because I feel it loses a small amount of heat, and that annoys me.
Yeah, and you're right. You're right. If it's restaurant food, then yeah, I want to eat it in, man. I don't want to lose the crisp as well.
Yeah, I don't want the steam.
Yeah, when you lose the steam, you lose the percentage of quality.
Yeah, it's like, you know, a Subway, you can relate to this, Dan. If you get it and on a takeaway, and for me, if the salad is hot, I don't like it.
Oh, I'm dead.
I hate that.
Frivled up iceberg, right?
I hate that. That makes me feel sick.
All right, Super, what are you saying?
I'd have to agree with Hugo, man. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to, innit?
All right, Dan, what's your second question?
I've got two questions. They're quite similar. So what did you want to be when you grew up? When you were growing up, what did you want to be?
I wanted to be a singer, like, or a musician. Like, I was mad into, like, Michael Jackson and that. I wanted to be some kind of, like, performer. Are you talking mad young? Are you talking, like...
Yeah, I'm talking about as a kid.
I wanted to be a musician of some kind of performer, yeah.
Yeah. I think, same. I remember doing a show for my nan and granddad with loads of accents one time. And afterwards, I remember being beaming, going, oh, that was pretty good. Maybe I should definitely get into this.
Yeah.
And quite similar, but these are probably, people probably think these are like dead questions, but it's just like I'm struggling because obviously I know you.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself in 20 years time?
Yeah, good one, man. I'd like to hear Hugo's answer.
Well, obviously thinner than Sipa, which I already am. To know, man, hopefully doing the same stuff but bigger scale.
Yeah, same. Like, I'm not going to lie, I have visions that, you know, when you envision it, and it's, sometimes it can be the worrying vision where you're fucking homeless or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. But the positive vision that I have always goes back to, I'm working on what we're doing, you know, comedy, writing, but on a bigger scale, but still doing what I love and sticking by my own rules as I do it, you know, and taking it international, you know, that and coincided with, you know, having seen more of the world and traveling more, yeah. And more, you know, like that's what, you know, that's what I love, Dan, innit? Like,
yeah, 100%. I feel traveling is the most valuable experience you could have, man.
Definitely.
Probably open your mind.
Listen, man, Dan, you've been an amazing guest.
Yeah, thank you, man.
You know we love you. Thanks for coming on. And the last question we ask all our guests, are you our best friend?
Yeah, of course, man. Nah, we're more than that, man. We're family.
Yeah, mate! Brotherhood! But yeah, man, bro, thanks for coming on, bro.
Yeah, thank you, man.
And it was sick.
This is the outro. See you later. And good luck. Stay lucky, boy. Stay lucky, boy.
Fucking big up Dan for coming on, man. That's sick.
Yeah, thank you, Daniel.
It was actually proper interesting. Like, me and you, like, we talk more, innit? We're more like open, I guess, than Dan. And so having a mate on, you know the stories, but it's sick to hear Dan's take on it because he was just quiet a lot of the time.
Yeah, he's quiet when we're all together. So, yeah. Like, getting something out of him, you feel like, is wow. But really, yeah, it's just because it's loads of us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
We can't be bothered to compete for attention.
Yeah, man. Big up Danny Rankin. Follow Dan on Instagram, at Danny Rankin, I believe it is.
Yeah.
More live shows be coming. Yeah. Or more streams, yeah, for
more
now.
Street shit.
Yeah, for the culture. Come on.
Yeah, all about street shit.
Yeah.
Have you ever taken a shit in the street?
Big time. Actually, I have on a train platform.
Have you? When was that?
Back in the day, all nighters, isn't it? I think I was doing... No, it was before. I'd only smoke weed and everyone was doing beans and that and they were all up all night. I was freezing and fuming. Just sat on the platform and wiped my ass with a leaf.
Oh, God.
That's Skepta bars about me.
I've wiped your back in relief. I used a public toilet, but they didn't have toilet paper, and I had to get off the bus. So I used my boxer shorts and then just went home commando.
There you go. And there you have it. Yeah. Catch us next week. We'll be talking about other things, chatting shit. Yeah. See you later.
Yeah.
Hey, yo! Will everyone shut the fuck up? I want to give a crazy, stupid, dope fly shout out to everyone involved in this podcast.
Nah, fuck that. Who's the brain that produces this show, man?
Man like Rupert Magendie.
And who's the audio editor?
James Torrance, check
it. House. Who's the video editor?
Ha ha, James Lord.
And who does all the illustrations?
It's Alison the Ink.
Mad on the visuals, bruh.
Shout all the posse down at Acast Laboratory. Hip-hop, am I right, hustler?
You're not wrong, Playboy Valentino.
How was it? Well, you can't really answer. But we're going to be doing a few more where it's just me and Hugo talking absolute Victorian sewage canal. So if you liked it and you want to send us questions or topics or just anything you want to say about the show, holler us on chattingshit1@gmail.com. That's chattingshit1@gmail.com. Just send your shit in and we'll read it all out. So yeah, that's about it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.